Become the CEO of your life. The Tea Talk with Oliver Herrmann and Kai Schrader.
What does it mean to take full control of your mind, body, and potential? Today's guest is someone who has literally pushed the boundaries of human performance by doing what most of us would think impossible. Holding his breath underwater for over 22 minutes, diving beneath frozen lakes and mastering the art of using the breath as a gateway to strength, resilience, and transformation. Discovery Channel named him the ultimate superhuman. He is a four-time world freediving champion, author of the best-selling book Breathology, and founder of the Breathology Method. With a PhD in medicine and a deep understanding of psychology, physiology, and ancient breathwork practices, he bridges science and self-mastery. His mission? To help people all over the world reconnect with their breath, break through their mental and physical limits, and ultimately become the CEOs of their own lives. What a perfect guest for our podcast. Get ready and explore what it truly means to take charge, not just for your health, but of your inner power. Let's dive in. Welcome, Stee Severinsen, to this Tea Talk episode. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for inviting me, and thank you everyone listening. And I'm very excited about this talk today. Thank you so much.
Stee, welcome also from my side. It's amazing to have you. So before we dive into like your life, what drives you, what I'd be interested, I mean, Oliver was already touching it, swimming for more than 20 minutes, like throughout the canal, swimming 150 meters, I believe, underneath like bricks of ice, right? And like staying in a tank with sharks for 20 minutes holding your breath. Okay, so first of all, I'm really intrigued about the tank of sharks. Like, what drove you doing that? And like, how do you stay cool and relaxed and conscious somehow in these kind of situations, if you do? Just take us on that journey.
Okay, I think that's a very good place to start, actually, for everyone listening today, maybe as a different kind of introduction. I have a background in biology and a master's degree in biology, neurophysiology, and marine biology. I always loved nature. I was born a biologist, even though if I hadn't gone to university, I would still consider myself a biologist. I love watching nature, animals, how they perform, how they move, how they evolve, how they communicate. And then I did my PhD in medicine, so I understood more about humans and natural sciences and health science mixed together. But what really also came to me during those many years of teaching at university, of nerding and being very myopic, being very focused on a task of science and research, is the competitiveness. And that's not always a good thing. Same in business. It's not really sharing is caring. It's about protecting your knowledge, about protecting your research. And I also found that with research funds and the business of research, it's not always so pretty. So oftentimes, the great knowledge and discoveries, they don't come out and benefit normal people, everyday people. It's very nerdy and it's very competitive. So after I finished my PhD in medicine, I had already become a four-time freediving world champion, and I was well on my way into, you can say, my adult life. I had started a consultancy company on the side and was traveling the world for my trainings. And I was also starting helping companies and their employees to breathe better and stay more mental resilient to stress and be more creative and productive and make better decisions. But still, I found this gap. So I thought I needed to do something so I could get science out to people in a more simple way. And that's when I created Breathology, which Oliver correctly said, it's the mix of ancient wisdom, yoga, timeless wisdom, blended with cutting-edge modern science and performance. So because you can measure sports and you can measure the depth and the time, it's very concrete. It's very easy for anyone to understand, even though they don't understand the background. So now we come back to the Shark Tank, even though it was a bit of a segue. I realized that when I became the world champion one time, two times, three times, four times, and different world records, I said it really didn't matter so much. It mattered to me, and it was a personal journey, and maybe my family or somebody around me was happy and proud, but it really didn't make much of a difference, or certainly not a dent in the universe. But then I realized when I started doing my Guinness World Records, the official Guinness World Records, they were much more media prone. So the media liked to write about it. So I thought, I got this crazy idea. What if I become the first to hold my breath for more than 20 minutes underwater? If I could be the first human on the planet at that time in 2010, it was about 7 billion people. And then I started visualizing and dreaming like we all do as children, especially, hopefully also in business when we grow up. So from that point on, I started making my Guinness World Records as a performance, as my way of expressing myself. You can say like a dance, like a ballerina. So it was my statement of work and being very precise, being very exact. So in 2010, I thought if I could hold my breath for 20 minutes and 10 seconds, it would be very accurate. It would be easy for a journalist to remember 2010, like the year, and then to make it even a bit fun so you're not always too serious about yourself and about life. I thought, why not do it in a Shark Tank April 1st, like an April's Fool, you know, to fool the journalists and people, because it could seem maybe to some people a bit unbelievable or unfathomable. And like I said, I'm also a marine biologist, so I also saw it as my duty to incorporate this aspect of nature, even though this was an aquarium, it was a big shark tank in Denmark, to be more specific. And I wanted to show people, and especially kids, that sharks are not out to kill you. Sharks are fish. They eat fish. They don't eat humans. It's not on their diet. Some few big sharks, great white sharks, tiger sharks, hammerhead sharks, very few big sharks are so big that when they're curious enough and they take an inquisitory bite, they kind of want to know who you are, like a little puppy does. It doesn't have hands. It takes a bite of you and it lets you go. But with those big sharks that are 8-10 meters long, of course, you're cut in two or you're losing a leg. So it's not really out to eat you. So my point was that sharks can be around you for 20 minutes or more without hurting you. Plus, to be very honest, it's boring to watch somebody holding his breath for 20 minutes. You're just floating in the top of the tank. So I always try to look from the perspective of the child, what could be exciting? And, you know, having these sharks swimming around, is he going to bite him? What's happening? And then for the grown-ups, how can you control your mind in this stressful environment and still lower your heart rate? Be calm and go into that radio station of your mind. We can get back to what I mean by that. But how can you get into that meditation underwater state where you go into flow, you forget about the future and the past, and you go into this flow state of being absorbed in the present moment, and time dissolves. It's a beautiful state, and we can all experience that, and especially if we train different techniques. So the 20 minutes 10 was a statement, and I realized from that moment on that when you do a Guinness World Record and you build a story around it, just like you do in your company, I don't know how you do marketing, I'm sure you have a great team doing that, but you need to build stories that connect with people. Whatever you want to sell, whatever you want to convey, you need to connect with a story. We tell stories. That's how we are, from father to son, from traditions and history. And we live from telling stories. And sometimes we sing and we remember stories better when we sing them for some reason in our brain. We remember songs better than we remember words and written pages. So I realized it was a good way to connect with people. And from then on, I did 21 minutes, the 22 minutes, as Oliver said, became the ultimate superhuman, crowned by Discovery Channel. I dove under ice and beat the Wim Hof record a few times. I did a record in Mexico in 2020 when everybody was so negative about COVID and all this nonsense going on, and the world was ruled by fear and all this non-scientific nonsense that was going on, lockdowns and children who never were at risk to start with. I was very vocal about all this nonsense going on and masks and everything that didn't make sense. And I questioned all that. I'm very anti-authoritarian if things don't make sense, scientifically, logically, historically. Shutting down children's social welfare and their development was just outrageous. So I thought, why not do something positive? So in the end of 2020, I did my last standing Guinness World Record in Mexico. And I swam in the open ocean again to remember that we need to take care of the ocean. And just because we have a global health crisis or whatever that was, man-made, but whatever that is, we still need to protect the ocean, be aware of our environment. And I did it in a national park in Mexico. So I try to make my record something more than myself. You can say in the beginning of my career, I did world records for myself, if that makes sense. But you need to start somewhere, right? Same when you make money or make a company, you start somewhere and then you build it up and then you have a team and then you're suddenly helping more people. So that's the background of why I chose to do the 20 minutes, 10 seconds breath hold to start with.
Now, I need to ask, you mentioned it in a side sentence. Yeah, and then I became free dive world champion. You don't wake up one morning and say, I want to become a free dive world champion. How did that evolve? I mean, what brought you to going into the ocean and holding your breath in the first place? Was there a compelling event or was it a natural evolvement?
Well, first of all, like all of us, I started holding my breath for 9 months. So that was a great start. And that went well. And then I came out to this world. And people have to realize when you're in your mother's womb, you're not breathing. You're connected to your mother and life through the umbilical cord, this little rope that sends blood and oxygen into your system. You have water in your lungs, water in your mouth, water in your ears, water in your nose. So it's a very natural state for embryos and little babies. As we know, they usually love water, especially if it's warm and nice. Reminds them of this first state of life in that little aquarium in the mother's womb. So it's a very peaceful place to be, and it's a reminder of the first heartbeats and the first connection we had with life as we know it. Even though we don't remember it intellectually, intelligently, we can get back to that embryonic state and remember some of the sensations, or like connecting with the mother's heartbeat and things that calm us down. We have this innate, we have this with us or inborn nature. Then I came out and I was born a Pisces on a sunny summer's day, a Thursday in Denmark, 1973, 8th of March, Women's International Day. Congratulations. And then I took to water like a duck to water. I was lucky. We had a swimming pool in my home. My dad had built a beautiful home. We had a boat as well. We sailed around. My mom was Swedish, so I was also a lot in Sweden, hunting in the forests, exposed a lot to nature. But we sailed, so my parents wanted my younger brother and I to be good swimmers for safety reasons. Also, when you have a swimming pool running around with kids, you need to make sure you have good, strong swimmers. So it was very natural. My mother took me. She was also a swim teacher besides of her job helping blind and visually impaired children. So she took me swimming as a baby, and I never stopped. At the age of 5, I got selected for something called the talent team. I don't know if they do it anymore. It was a kind of Russian, Eastern Germany block style thinking. I don't think they do it so much more in Denmark, but it was kind of rigid training, and it was in the 70s, but I'm so thankful for it. It was great to get, you know, discipline and training. I loved it. And then every weekend we had competition. So I started from a very young age with competitive swimming. And also because my family traveled, as you, most of you know, in Germany. Well, Germany is a huge country, but the northern parts of Germany and Denmark are very closely connected. It's not always the nicest summer, to put it in a mild way. So my family would always travel to the Mediterranean, at that time called Yugoslavia or Spain or France or Italy. And we would stay there for a few weeks. So I would run to the ocean with my brother, and my parents wouldn't see me all day. And we would, one of the proudest moments I can tell you was not the 20 minutes, 10 seconds I held my breath. That was great. One of my proudest moments of my entire life was when I was a young kid with my brother and we got our first spear gun. It's like a harpoon, you know, like James Bond. And we also on top of that got a knife you could put on your leg. So I have that picture with my brother and we're like 10 feet tall. Like we're so proud with this spear gun in Spain that was. So I was just always exposed to nature. And I think I have very normal parents, very conservative and a little bit boring, very loving parents. But for some reason, they trusted that my brother and I could go on these crazy adventures without harming ourselves or others. So, it started already then, Oliver, that I just loved water and I was very competitive. And then you ask me, how do you become the world champion? Well, you have this dream. You don't wake up just one day saying it, but you start visualizing how things could be and imagine, even though nobody else believes in you or hopefully your friends or family. I didn't get any sponsors to go back to that. So, you know, now people come running and want to sponsor all kinds of things, but now I'm just immune and I my life is kind of free, and we can get back to the CEO of your own life. I'm completely free and independent of time, and I'm financially in a good place. I can travel around the world, and I'm very fortunate and privileged, very blessed. But back then, when you know, people didn't trust you, you also get this inner fire that you want to show the world, and you're young, and you know, you have this energy, and you can use that as a positive fuel. I'm sure we all know that everybody listening on the podcast have had adversity, or things didn't believe, or things didn't turn out the way you wanted to, or people didn't believe in you. It might be in high school, or your teacher said something, you're stupid, or you would never surmount to anything. And most people I see succeed today, especially in the entrepreneurial world, were kids that were not A-plus students, and they had some different ways of thinking. Maybe a lot of energy, you would give them some diagnosis today, but because they have this different way of thinking, they also see the world differently and find often much better solutions than people thinking in a very boxed and regular way. And then just to end off with the world championship, so the becoming the world champion, at some point, winning becomes a habit. You know, in Denmark, we have this law of Jante, you know, the Jante law. You shouldn't be too much. In English, it's called the tall puppy syndrome. You should chop the heads of the tall puppies. You shouldn't shine. You shouldn't be above everybody else. You should not think you're more than anybody else. And this is a very Nordic thing, especially Danish thing. It's not a very American thing. They love everything is grand. And same in Dubai, where I also have a company now and live. They love that you're successful, and they attract people that have accomplished something, whether it's financially or economically or some other way in sports, they have accomplished something and they are welcomed very much. In Dubai, I just got my golden visa. But winning can become a habit. And I also think that goes for business. I'm not a very good businessman. I don't think I'm very interested or good at business. My father was or is a good businessman. I'm more in the segment of helping people and wanting to share knowledge and good things, but I'm not a very hardcore business person. But you can apply it to business because winning can become a habit. And it's all about mindset and what the way you use your mind to visualize, imagine things, and then make them come into a physical reality. I think that's how everything's created, to be honest. We don't just create something the next day just out of thin air. You have to take the, I call them baby steps. You have to train, you have to get your education, your knowledge, your background. And then you can create, especially if you're very dedicated and passionate, something remarkable. And that goes for anything in life. It can become a habit.
I don't have the ambition to do 22 minutes. I would be happy with a couple of minutes. How to start? Now, if someone of our listeners would ask, how can I get better at breathing in general and maybe also controlling breath and maybe also wanting to hold breath for a longer period of time? Where to start?
Great question. Well, first of all, I'm always a bit worried, especially since I got older and more mature. I'm 52 now, that my records actually became a blockage or an obstacle for people watching me. Like, I can never do that, or that's crazy, or he's insane, or he's just a madman, or he's trying to kill himself, when I really just love life and love to explore life. But I hope through this dialogue also today that we can open the door and let people cross that bridge into the wonderful powers of breath work and also breath holding. As you know, Oliver, I always say breath holding is the new black. I still stand by it, and it will be. So a good place to start is people shouldn't be discouraged about the minutes. I just do something to demonstrate the highest potential I've reached, or humanity, or whatever you want to call it. But it's certainly just to inspire people. It's not to take away their, you know, ambitions to say, I can never do that. That's not the point. The point is that people need to start to realize that we are breathing human beings. And let's get back to that mother's womb and the umbilical cord. The moment you're born, everyone listening to this podcast, the moment they were born, the umbilical cord was severed. It was cut. And you scream, you get the water out of your lungs, and you take your first breath, right? You become a individual, breathing human being. You're independent. You're not dependent, connected with your mother to stay alive. You are an individual now. And that birth gift of life is given to you through breath. We see breath in the Bible, in all traditions in the world. Yahweh, God, shaped man and blew the breath into his nostrils and man became a living human being. I'm not talking about being religious here or not. I'm just stating what has been handed down for thousands of years from different generations and different histories and different religions. And the breathing is life. It is what keeps us alive. We all know we can stay for about a month without food, maybe a week without water, a few minutes without air, right? It is the source of life. And you don't need to be neither a biologist or a professor in math to figure out that oxygen is what we take in with the air. There is 21% oxygen in the air we breathe. It comes into your lungs. Then it is transported with your blood system out to every single cell of your trillions of cells. And inside the cell, you have the energy process. Small plant, small energy micro factories, they're called mitochondria, and they produce energy by the food you eat and the oxygen you breathe, and that produces ATP, adenosine triphosphate. It's a phosphorus-rich bond, and when that is broken, the energy is released. So we have this microsystem in every single cell, and if it's not maintained, we get sick or we get very lethargic or have low energy. So that is where we start with the foundation of breathing. And every single person listening to this podcast today or another day is breathing between 25 and 30,000 times. Every single human being every day. So the first step, Oliver, I think, is that we learn to appreciate this gift of life, which is breathing, and embrace it. And it's not mumbo jumbo or voodoo, yoga, flower power, crazy 70s Woodstock, crazy stuff. It's hardcore scientific, factual biology. And if we look at breathing and then think, oh, but we're also human beings, we're Homo sapiens. It means the thinking being, the intellectual being. That is the translation from Latin of Homo sapiens. The sapient, humus, the aware being. We should be aware of our breathing. That is the first step. And like you said in the introduction, breathing is something we take for granted, and that is our first mistake. We take it for granted, and not until we really need to breathe, whether that is when you're held underwater, that's why it's fun to do it, not holding somebody underwater, but to have people hold their breath either underwater, which, by the way, never hold your breath underwater for safety reasons. It's the first rule of diving. But when I take people and safely teach them breath holding underwater, or as we will talk about today, breath holding on dry land, then you challenge the greatest reflex of life, which is breathing. Then you truly understand and appreciate the beauty and the importance of breathing. But it's sad that we sometimes have to be very sick or mentally ill or very stressed. Maybe, you know, so stressed we can't even work for months or years until we realize, oh my gosh, I need to stop and focus on my breathing and take control of my own life. Because with breathing, when you control your breath, you also control your mind. And that is kind of the secret of yoga, that it's a shortcut to controlling your mind. And this rambling, intelligent, intellectual mind we have that actually plays against us many times when we don't know how to manage the mind.
That's a good point, actually, and probably also a good transition, because maybe it's not unlikely for people to think something like, why even bother? Because breathing, it obviously seems to work already somehow automatically, right? So the question comes, like, if I don't want to break any kind of records, if it's not up for myself to stay underwater for X seconds or minutes or longer, and breathing itself works very well, why should I bother? Like, what are the benefits that I can take away from that, especially for my everyday life?
Yeah, that's like the spoiled, kind of sad reality that many people think like that. Like I said, it's only when you're really forced to breathe or you have a lung issue or lung cancer or COPD, smoker's lungs or chronic obstructive lung disease or something similar, cardiovascular issues, you know, then you realize, oh my gosh, I really need to start paying attention. But why not do it much before? why not be preventive? And so to make a list so that people listening start this moment today with us, not tomorrow, not in a week. First of all, the way you breathe is the way you live. So the more full your breath is, the more trained it is, the more subtle, the better you're breathing, the more oxygen you get into your body, and the better you can perform. Whether that's in your workspace, as a father to your kids, as a husband to your wife, as a leader to your team, better decision-making, having more oxygen. I train the Navy SEALs to take some examples. I train the Royal Air Force. Split decision-making, life and death decisions. If you can have more oxygen in your brain, stay more calm in these situations where it's not only your own life at risk, but also other people you're rescuing in hostage situations and war zones and very, very serious situations in life, then you need to have those extra percentages on your side.
So breathing helps you to stay calm. Can you explain on that?
With breathing, you have this shortcut, this pathway to go into what's called the parasympathetic part of your nervous system. So now we can go a bit back to the anatomy, the physiology of the human being, which is the same of most animals. But let's stick with us humans. We have something called the vagus nerve, the vagabond nerve. It means a wandering nerve. That's the word vagabond or vagus. It's the 10th cranial nerve, very easy to remember, 10 fingers, beautiful round number. I claim that it's one of the most important nerves. Doctors can say something different, but that is one of my claims. And it is so because it is the main highway to the part of us that can relax. And besides not being aware of our breathing and not being taught in school and businesses outside of Deutsche Telekom, we're not really taught about the power of breathing and how we can use it as children, so we don't take it into our old or adult life, our senior life, which is, of course, a shame and needs to be changed. We learn math and other kind of not really important things when we have ChatGPT and a calculator nowadays. We don't need to remember all these kind of things and how to do it. We can just figure it out. But we are not taught about how to really use our body. We're taught football and how to play basketball, but that really doesn't teach us how to use the breathing, how to use our incredible, amazing body. The human body is the most amazing thing on this planet. And one of my missions, like Olive also said in the beginning, is to make people breathe better, yes. But it's actually deeper than that, I would say. It's to make people understand and realize that they are the most amazing thing on this planet. And they should use their body and their mind to the fullest capacity once they're on this wonderful journey called life. So that is what I'm really hoping to inspire people with. So let's go back to the nervous system. When you breathe in, and people can breathe with me now, and I'll mention 5 or 10 things on bullet points so people really understand the need to breathe in this way and why it's beneficial. But when you breathe in with your nose and use the belly and the diaphragm and slight pause and then exhale with the mouth. You can also use the tongue. I call it snake breathing. And a slight pause again. If we do that one more time and people listening, close their eyes, I soften my voice, and you breathe in with me through the nose, put a hand on your belly. Like you're smelling a beautiful flower, this scent of the spring flower. You hold a slight pause. That's the second phase. There are 4 phases in breathing. Exhale now with the soft closed eyes. Slow exhale, about double the inhale. And in this exhale, you feel the shoulders relax. You feel your face become softer. You feel your eyelids and your forehead become softer. This is trainable. So now, with just 1 or 2 breaths, your mind state is completely changed to what it was 10 seconds ago. So imagine now you have to go to a board meeting. You have to go into a creative process. You have to go into the finance or budget or cut something. This is a completely different mindset you enter with, or a discussion with your kids or your wife or your Navy SEAL team friends. So it's a way to gain mental control, emotional stability, because you go into the rest and digest. And what you do is you turn on the vagus nerve, They are paired, the nerves. There's one in each side. We have 12 nerves in all in the human body. It doesn't really matter. But just to explain, like a car, how it's built, we have 12 wires that are paired. It means they're in a pair in each side. And they go from the brain, from the main computer, out to the body. So the arms we can move because of nerves, but we also have nerves moving the heartbeat, moving the digestion, moving the spleen and the liver and all these subconscious or unconscious things going on in the body. And the great secret of yoga, which science and especially doctors really haven't embraced or realized, to be honest, but that's again back in history and philosophy when Descartes cut off the head from the body and said, no, the mind and the body are not connected. That's where the modern problem with medical science is that they just focus on the problem at hand. They don't look at the background or the root source of the problem. Why are you depressed? It doesn't help to give you antidepressant medicine because that's not the reason. It's not going to cure your problem. It's not going to cure the cause just to take a pill. You can also just get drunk. It has the same effect. Smoke weed or drugs or whatever people do, but it does not go back to the root cause. So that's the main problem, that modern medicine is very myopic. Let's say people can't sleep well. Oh, you need sleep medicine. No, you need to start to learn to breathe and relax and challenge the way you're living your life and look at the maybe might be different ways of responding to stressful situations. So you need to go back some steps and look at that. So with breathing, you can turn on those parts of your nervous system that lead you into a relaxed state. That is the secret of yoga.
So just to apply some kind of probably easier ways of translating several aspects that I just heard you saying, please correct me if I'm wrong here, but what I've understood is that you said that people tend to be in a state of stress, which is directly related to the way their nervous system works. And if I get you right, what you were saying is that the nervous system seems to be like, for most people, most of the days, somehow out of control and overstimulated. And that seems to have some kind of like negative effects. You were talking about decision-making, for example, and I would like to know, like, why is stress impacting my decision-making in a negative manner? But just give me one more second. And in addition to that, you just said it's easier to deal with stressful situations when you're with your family or if there's something challenging going on in your life. You're just better in coping with life by being able to somehow manage your breath. So maybe as a doctor, can you explain in more easy words what's happening here? What's happening with our bodies in our modern society? What's happening with our nervous system? And how is this impacting the way we're living our lives? And how much better could our lives be if we would know about the theory, the background of what you were just talking about?
With greatest pleasure. That is like the core we're getting into now. And I love translating medical, Latin, all this nonsense stuff into everyday life people's language so they can actually understand it and apply it. Everything you said was correct, but I would like to make a little twist on it. So you said that we have this stressful nervous system and it has all this negativity, and that's true. But the reason we are stressed, there are two main reasons in this universe. One is because of the modern hectic lifestyle, which has changed so much from the last 30, 40, 50 years since the three of us here listening on this podcast or conducting it. We were children and ran around in nature with a bow and arrow and went fishing. No social media, not 1 million inputs a day. So that is the reason why the nervous system is overburdened. So I just want to make that connection. It's because of society and the everyday life that is nobody's fault. It's just a cruel reality. The second reason is that we're not taught what we are hopefully teaching people on this podcast today and what people should be taught in school. We're not taught to become the CEO of our own life, how to manage our stress, how to manage our response to stressful situations. So you talked about coping mechanisms. So all I'm doing with breathing and especially breath holding, that's why it's my little lucky charm. I love the breath holding because it's the ultimate way of controlling your whole life. There is no better self-management than breath holding because you go against the strongest reflex of life, which is breathing. So no matter what you shoot at me, there's nothing better than to use breath holding as a teacher, guide yourself to self-mastery of the mind, of not being stressed. So my main mission with breath holding, where I'm pushing this to not just companies, but also the Navy SEALs. And by the way, Olympian winning athletes. I was training Madison Keys, who now finally got her Grand Slam at the Australian Open last month. And she had, without exposing too much of my clients and private things, but grand mental challenges, let's put it in that way. And that is often when you're very driven and passionate, you want so much of life and you want so much from yourself. But then it's also hard when you fail and you beat yourself up, especially mentally. And that can lead to self-negativity and self-doubt. And then you're not on a winning streak. Then winning does not become a habit. But then you need to get back on that path. So to your very important question, so the dear listeners can understand what we're talking about here. The core is that when you take control of your breath, you take control of your life in the sense that it's the life, energy, and oxygen. So what are the negative effects of not breathing well? When you do chest breathing and mouth breathing.
So chest breathing means you're not breathing fully, is that correct?
It means high breathing or from the mouth, and the mouth leads to chest breathing because you don't channel the air. I talk about airflow control. So when you flow the air through the nose, because the nostrils are much smaller, then the air has time and you can control and direct the air to the bottom of your lungs. And that's where you have the most amount of alveoli, millions of little beautiful rosebuds, little flower heads. And around those are the blood vessels. And that is where the oxygen jumps into the blood and where the CO2 goes back into the lungs. And you exhale that to the plants and the flowers. And the sun is shining and they produce photosynthesis and oxygen for us. And then we live together in happy harmony. And that's why we need plants and forests around the world. So people that don't breathe well often tend to breathe high in the chest. And as you don't think about your breathing, this becomes a bad habit. Now, this puts pressure on your heart. So let's go back to the doctor. Before you go to the doctor and tell your doctor, ooh, well, the doctor tells you you have high blood pressure, hypertension. Oh, we need statins. We need this medicine. We need that medicine. Maybe you should just start to breathe better and start to see from a natural way, can you heal yourself? Can you cure yourself? Can you lower your blood pressure? Maybe look at your diet as well, things like that. So improper breathing leads to elevated heart rate. When the heart rate goes up, it produces more adrenaline. Adrenaline is one of the key stress hormones in our body. Cortisol is another one, but that's more used for restoration, for rebuilding after physical exercise and so forth. So adrenaline is the fight and flight hormone. It's the hormone we feel in our body when we're almost tripping over something on the ground, or we are getting hit by a car, we have to jump to the side. It's a survival hormone. It makes us react in an instant, but that's what it's made for. It's made for an instant. It's not made to be at high levels in our bloodstream for weeks or months and years. And truth be told, that's why people drop dead like flies at the age of 40 or 50, especially in high-profile jobs, from stroke. Because you put too much pressure on your heart, too much pressure on the cardiovascular system in general, and one day it just says, boom. Could also be stroke to the brain. So if you don't take care of your nervous system, if you don't take care of your cardiovascular system from breathing, which is the main source of how the system is working, then you're already doing yourself a disfavor. So if you're not breathing right, you're putting pressure on your cardiovascular system, which then again produces more adrenaline, which then starts this negative spiral, we call it, a dark one going down and down. And when you have adrenaline, you need to breathe more because you're not breathing efficiently. So it's a very dark path to go down. But if you're not told how to stop, for example, with a breath hold, like I know Oliver loves this stuff, but if you do a simple breath hold of 10 seconds, you stop your mind. It's a life hack, you can say. You stop your mind and you stop that breathing in and out. We all know when we're sad, when we're angry, when we lose emotional control. We could also talk about business here. When you're upset, we are not productive and we're not making the right decisions, to answer your question from before. Why are we not doing that? That is because we're in a fight and flight mode. We're angry. We have high adrenaline. We just want to fight or punch or run. That's really how we work. We're very primitive. Once you take a step back, breathe in, put a smile on your face, which makes miracles because it releases a lot of good hormones. dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, the loving feeling, safe and feeling loved and hugged. It's a very important thing to have physical contact and hug and be with your colleagues and speak and engage socially. When we do that, we turn off the adrenaline because you cannot be both in the fight and flight and the rest and digest system at the same time. We have a dynamic nervous system and one is lowered when the other is altered. So if you're in the altered fight and flight, the stress system, you lower the rest and digest. What does it mean? Poor sleep, high blood pressure, poor digestion, all the negative things, pure immune system, meaning you're more prone to getting sick. If you get sick, you don't get healthy and well as fast. And sadly enough, we have huge global problems with mental instability, mental, let's just call it depression and things that are even worse, anxiety, fear, panic attacks, the list is long. So with proper breathing, you oxygenize every single cell, you optimize the way it cleanses the body from inside out. You ask me, why do you make better decisions? You do that because you lower your heart rate, you have better composure, you see things from a more creative aspect, not from the myopic, I want to kill you or I need to run now perspective. And something magical happens in your brain when you start breathing and relaxing. You open different centers, and that is the radio station I talked about briefly in the 20 minute, 10 seconds breath hold. You can learn from breath work and especially breath holding to go into a state of mind that is different from what people are listening to now. They're in beta. When you listen and analyze and talk negatively or positively to yourself, you're in a state called beta. That is the grown adult normal state, the awake state. But you can learn to go into that flow state that we are living as children, where we're dreaming and not worried about the phone bill tomorrow or the next budget or what happened yesterday, which we can never change anyways. But human beings, especially grown-ups, are world champions in worry. Worry about the past and carrying that negative garbage into the future is not helping us, but we're not very good at managing our mind.
Here, you mentioned that example of the athlete just a couple of minutes ago. And also now what you just were saying, maybe just taking stock of where we are. So if you have not yet done it or not yet doing it, so from tomorrow on, breathe through your nose only. Yeah. Breathe into your belly and focus on the exhale. So longer exhale than inhale.
Yes.
So that's already a good start.
And you can do that anywhere, sitting down in the morning, in the car, in the traffic, instead of being angry with the traffic and say, wow, I have 10 minutes to breathe now.
Exactly. Now, in order to get to that better mental clarity you mentioned with the athlete, yeah, or to really counteract and get you into the flow state that you just mentioned, what else would be required except for the three steps I just mentioned?
Well, also to answer the question from before, from the benefits, as you said, Oliver, when you use the nose, now we can be more scientific from the scientific perspective, right? What are the benefits? We want some concrete evidence here. When you use the nose, not only do you get more information from the environment, from people around you, from the flowers, from the senses and the smells around you, you also become more aware of how you breathe and that affects the people around you. So if you talk about business, your colleagues, right? When you're more composed and calm and aware of how you breathe, that has a positive effect on people around you. So when you're not tense and stressed in your voice and the emotion diese hier machen, yes, and like very angry and direct, then when you're more calm and more composed, then people also easier buy into your whatever thing you want to sell or tell them, right? You're more likable. People like likable people, whether you're selling or listening or anything. So when you use the nose, you also breathe in nitrogen oxide. The Nobel Prize was given about 17 years ago to three scientists for the discovery of the effect of nitrogen oxide. NO is the molecule. And the benefit is that it is a vasodilator. It opens the blood vessels. So if you're tense or cramped up in your brain, in your body, in your cardiovascular system, in your lungs, then breathing with your nose, also if you have lung issues, lung disease, COPD, post-COVID issues, using the nose helps to uptake 10, 12, 15% more oxygen simply because it's a vasodilator. It means it opens the blood vessels. It has the effect of relaxing the smooth muscle tissue, which lines the blood vessels. That's the reason. So it opens up the system more, meaning that oxygen can go into your system at an easier rate. Then you also use your diaphragm better when you breathe into the belly, when you use the nose and get the breathing deep into your lungs where you have most of these alveoli. They're sitting in the bottom of the lungs, most of them. When the diaphragm is more flexible, you get a more full breath of air. So instead of breathing what I think most people do, only 70% of their capacity, 60% of their capacity, they go up to 80, 90. People always ask me, how come you're never sick? How can you be so energetic? How can you always run around being in all these parts of the world and not having jet lag? It's about managing your energy levels. And you do that from your biology and, of course, from your psychology, but mainly from your basic biology. Stay as healthy as you can, the way nature made you. So breathe in the best possible way. Super oxygenize your cells to the highest ability and stay strong. Have a good immune system, right? And with the diaphragm, you also have better digestion. So that means that at night, I mentioned it before, when you're in the fight and flight, you lower the rest and digest, meaning that you don't digest the food, you don't take up nutrients as well. You get poor digestion at night and you get poor sleep. And the adrenaline also has some effect on the insulin, because then you go and eat little snacks and then the insulin spikes and you just create a bad habit throughout the day and night. So with breathing, you have a way to correct all this. It's free, it's ever present, and it's very beneficial because you also learn to calm down your mind. And the next step, of course, that we can talk about is also the breath holding. And you know, we have the 7-day breath hold challenge. I think either you send it out in a link or people can just find the 7-day breath hold challenge online. But that is 1 week of full breath training. And just to comment on the question I got first, what are the benefits? Well, I try to teach people to become comfortable in an uncomfortable situation. And if we go a big step back for all the listeners today, the reason why we are stressed is not because of the world. It is because the way we react to the world. And we all know this when we take a holiday or we need a reset or go somewhere else or we are forced to take a reset. Then we realize that it's the way I react to things that make me sick or make me feel stressed. It's not because of the world. The world doesn't care about you. It has no effect on you. You let the world affect you. So with breath holding, like I mentioned before, it is the ultimate way to do self-control and become the CEO or the master of your own life, because you go against the strongest reflex of life, which is breathing. And you should not hold your breath for 10 minutes or 15 minutes or 20 minutes. You just aim for 10 seconds, then 30 seconds, then 1 minute, then 2 minutes. And I think, Oliver, you have done even 3 or 4 minutes. So you can maybe be a testimony to how that progress is starting to take place, how it makes you self-confident, and how with baby steps your mind starts to change. So I try to offer people a life hack. That is why I call it breath holding is the new black. People can go and see a TED talk I did some years ago. They can find it on YouTube if they write breath holding is the new black. But there are often more reasons to why it's so beneficial to people with stress and veterans with PTSD and so forth. It's a life hack to manage your mind under stress.
Let's translate it into an everyday situation. Let's just use the office as one example. So let's assume you get or I got really triggered by someone or a situation. Now, you were just mentioning the breath hold. So what would I exactly need to do in this second, beyond understanding that I need to somehow hold my breath? What would be the exact steps here?
Well, you could do breathing, very slow breathing. It has kind of the same effect, but the easiest would just be to hold your breath.
Just for my information, so I'm standing in front of this person and I'm really stressed out. So he's looking at me, I'm looking at him, and you're saying, Kai, hold your breath now.
Yeah, I'm saying, Kai, shut up.
And?
Listen to that person, and sometimes it's much better to listen.
Okay.
And not respond.
Yes.
And then when people hear what they're actually saying themselves, they might realize, oh, maybe it's a bit too much, or maybe it was a bit over the line or something like that. So maybe sometimes silence is a better answer then. So that is my point. When you react, I'm also not a saint. I do many stupid mistakes every day. But when you get your emotions out of control and you react to that thing, whether it's right or not, it might not serve you the best or your team or your family or your kids.
So it's not about being reactive. It's about being proactive in life. And being silent can be a proactive move. But do I understand it right? Is what you were talking about when you talked about breath hold, would that in this situation not be like not breathing, but just being silent? Or would it be the combination of being silent and at the same time?
You can breathe very slowly. That's why I said you can do both. Breathe very slowly with your nose and then focus on your breathing. That takes the focus away from the stress, the danger in front of you. But I would just suggest to keep it simple also for your listeners, hold your breath. I'm not saying hold your breath for 5 minutes. I'm not saying hold your breath until that person in front of you explodes because you're not responding like you're some maniac. I'm just saying wait those 5 seconds. Wait those 3 seconds. Hold your breath. So it's a reminder to yourself, you know, oh, this crazy freediving dude on this podcast said just hold my breath if there's a problem or a challenge in front of me. So it's just a way to bypass the situation or block the situation for a few seconds. Let me give you 2 examples. One is my brother is a fine eye surgeon. I've lectured for many of these surgeons, world's finest surgeons, not how to cope with their patients. I also teach that, but how they can become better surgeons. It's a very high-skilled job to be inside of the eye of another person with your tools, and there's some challenge suddenly because the person needs to sneeze or moves or gets afraid or gets a panic attack. There are a lot of things that can happen. So before, these surgeons would have a saying, stop, think. That's like a saying they had. Same here. Stop the problem, think, how can I solve it? After I started lecturing, I've been lecturing, it's something called the ESCRS for a few years. Last time was in Paris with 10,000 doctors from around the world. They changed that slogan, we can say, to stop, breathe, think. So we can translate the stop into hold your breath. They didn't do that. I'm just making that up now. We can say stop, stop whatever you're doing, stop breathing, pause, and then breathe. That is to make you breathe oxygen, to make you more intelligent, to get air into your lungs, to get oxygen to your brain. So you actually put energy into that machine that is computing the next move and then think. So with oxygen in your brain, you think more clearly. And then your brain opens a bit more for the reasons we talked about. The nitrogen oxide and different areas speak together in a better way. You can also go into delta, gamma, the different states of your brain, different radio channels. And you can learn to move into all that and you can use breathing as a guide. So my saying is that if you stop what you're doing and don't respond immediately, you have won already over yourself and the person in front of you. And then maybe you can, because you're composed and not reacting in a forceful, frightening way, then you can have a better dialogue and hopefully a better outcome. Whether it's a negotiation or something about the colleagues at work. I can give you another example. Yesterday on the train coming here, there was a very drunk, very sad person. Horrible person, probably, you know, doing a lot of criminal things, stealing from people. It was at the Bahnhof somewhere in Denmark. And he was just sitting there pestering people with his phone, playing music loud as there was nobody around him. And nobody said anything because that's also typical. Oh, you don't want to say something. And I went and said something to him in a polite way. I said, could you please put your headset? Of course, he didn't have a headset. He was drunk. Probably tough life, you know. And I went and said it to him. He got all upset and angry and started to get violent with me and stood up and started to force him, wanted to pick a fight. What I didn't tell you guys is also I'm a double Danish champion in judo. I trained the Navy SEALs also in combat and breathing for combat. So it would be an easy task for me to dismantle this guy, right? So what I did instead was I just stood there in front of him and I just dismantled the situation. I diffused the situation. And by just being...
How did you do it?
I just didn't react in a like powerful way. And I didn't say, I'm going to beat you up or sit down because you need to just put on those headphones because he wouldn't do it. He was drunk. But I just kind of said, well, then I just guess I have to get off at the next station, which I knew was my next train station 5 minutes later. So I just kind of out-tricked him intellectually. And I kind of just, by not being a threat to him, he just went back to his seat and just sat down. So by not escalating, but de-escalating the situation, it kind of just went away. But the point is that it's the way you react to a situation that leads to the next steps of solving, finding a better solution. And if we take breath holding here as just a fun little example, people can just start for fun to hold their breath for 10 seconds because that's never a challenge that's easy. It could be before you get into an argument with your teenage kids, and you can just start to smile inside yourself for those 10 seconds. Well, if that were me 30 years ago and I was the teenager now having an argument with my father, what would be a better way to react than starting a fight or saying, you can't take the car tonight, or I'm not gonna, you know, this and that. So how can you think one step ahead and get to a better resolvement?
It's amazing.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Steve. And we could talk for ages. I see that. I hear that. What a ride. I mean, thank you very much for taking us through all of this. I think by now it should have become clear the superpower that we have, and also your insights into the body, into the mind, into marine life, into physiology, into nature, a really broad ride. Thank you so much for those deep and inspiring insights.
An amazing ride. Wow.
To just get started, that's the basic thing. It doesn't matter how the mouth, the ears, the nose, I don't care how they breathe. Just start to be aware of this gift of life. And then comes this journey of fun. And then they can call Oliver and he can talk about the breath holds and the fun he has had. And you just need to start the journey. It doesn't matter your age or your state or your fitness level. You just need to get started in appreciating life in a deeper way. And then it just unfolds by itself. And as they say in yoga, when the student is ready, the master appears. So you just have to get started and wait, and the right moment comes.
Let's get started. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you so much.
Mindful moment. What a piece of wisdom. The world is not the problem, but your reaction to it. Life's challenges can really feel overwhelming, but we have the power to control how we respond. To take back control over our own actions, one tool is even free and always with you: your breath. Let's take a moment to really bring this idea home. Now, or later when it's more convenient and most importantly safe, take a mindful moment to close your eyes and take a deep breath through your nose. Fill your lungs slowly. Breathe deep into your belly. Get that oxygen to every corner of your lungs and hold it for a moment. Feel your heartbeat. And then release the breath through your mouth and let go of any tension in your body. Just a little. This is probably the most discreet tool you could ever use whenever you want to diffuse a situation where you might react poorly. Take a step back and breathe. Hit the pause button. And only then you can decide how to handle what's in front of you. Put this natural calming system to the test whenever the next opportunity arises. Maybe a red traffic light, or maybe a stressful presentation. Your breath is with you.
Wow, what a powerful story and what a strong depth of information that Steve was sharing with us. So as always, let's have a look what we took away from this, Oliver. What I took away is the fact that he talked about how normal we believe it is to breathe and that there's no appreciation at all for this life force because it's just like something that's happening each and every second onto its own. Ensuring this awareness of the breath and the appreciation as some kind of foundation to then really start working with it really made sense. And it's also something I might recall more often from now on. In addition to that, what I found interesting is that he was saying there are basically so many stressors out there which we can't really influence, but what we can influence is the way that we respond to these stressors, and that it's time to like really set up our own stress response management. And then when adding up on that, I mean, he was sharing quite some techniques. What I liked was especially his talk about the breath hold, because that was new to me. So I know about take a deep breath when something is triggering you in order to think clearly again, but that you can add up on the result and the experience of that and on more mental clarity and on more emotional sovereignty once you also include the breath hold was not so clear. So I'm definitely going to try that. So these are my three key takeaways. What about you?
Yes, I would like to underscore what you just said, Kai, because I think that our management capability of how to respond to those stressful environments that we are in, I think that's the, for me, so key that I would like to reemphasize it. The world is crazy, but we have it in our hands or in our breath, how to respond to this craziness outside in the world. And he gave some very practical insights how to handle this better. The second thing is that, and he talked a lot about that, everything is connected with everything, both in nature, but also within ourselves. He mentioned that vagus nerve, but with breathing, yeah, we have such an important and powerful tool to leverage this interconnectedness. So those would be my two key takeaways. Plus, I can really recommend the 7-day breath challenge that he mentioned and that we put into the show notes. It's out there. It's for free. It's easy to do. Sometimes a little bit painful, maybe, but effective. So that would be my key takeaways. And as always, dear listeners, if you like this episode, please follow us, give us a rating, give us your feedback, and recommend us to your friends. And as always, stay healthy and see you next time in 2 weeks.